Today on Tristan Storytime, a peacock proudly goes to the fair to show off his feathers. But his feathers and his big beak get him into very big trouble. Then in Sleeping Beauty, a princess falls asleep for 100 years after pricking a needle on a spinning wheel, and it's up to a prince's first kiss to wake her and the entire kingdom up. Next, a frog seeks to harm a mouse for his dastardly dinner plans, followed by the ever-so-popular song you can do with your fingers, the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And finally, the Tristan Storytime Poetry Corner presents Spring at its Finest, as we go about it with love, romance, and daffodils in I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud. Those stories and more next on Tristan Storytime. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Tristan Storytime. I'm your host, Tristan Gardner, and I'm certainly glad you could join me today. We've got some great stories picked out, and I want to extend an invitation to use your imaginations as I read them. So without any further ado, let's get the show on the road. In other words, on with the stories! Some people, and animals, love to share something special. I remember one time many years ago, when I was on my kindergarten field trip to the zoo, I saw a peacock spreading its large tail feathers. I was awestruck at such beauty that creature shared. Of course, there's one peacock who was way too arrogant for his own good and lost his special gift. I think it'd be a good idea for me to read this new old story that Laura Richards wrote in one of her 3-minute stories, and it's simply called How Mr. Peacock Went to the Fair. Mr. Peacock was proud. He had a fine long train, a splendid crest, and the grayest blue-green coat that ever was seen. And all day long, he would strut up and down the barnyard and say, "See what a beauty I am!" The geese and ducks and turkeys were much displeased at this.
"Beauty indeed," they said. "Of what use is your beauty? Can it hatch eggs? Tell us that."
And they turned their backs and walked away.
"These are stupid creatures," said Mr. Peacock. "Why should I stay among them? I will go to the fair, for there people will see my beauty and admire it."
So he spread his tail like a fan, raised his crested head, and strutted off down the road to the fair. Pretty soon, he met some young men who also were going to the fair.
"Aha," said Mr. Peacock, "these people will admire me."
And he strutted more than ever.
"Look," said the young men, "what a fine peacock, and what splendid feathers he has. They are just what we want for our hats."
They surrounded Mr. Peacock, and in spite of his screams of rage and terror, tore out 3 or 4 of his finest tail feathers and went away laughing. Presently, he fell in with a large flock of geese, which a boy was driving to the fair to sell. He spread his tail and tried to push his way to the head of the flock, but they took no notice of him and waddled steadily on, keeping close together.
"Make way, you stupid creatures," said Mr. Peacock. "Keep your dirty feet off my fine train."
"Quack,"
said an old gray goose, the grandmother of the flock.
"Keep your train out from under our feet, Mr. Strut. Who asked you to join our company?"
"Join your company, indeed," cried Mr. Peacock. "Get out of my way, you rude, clumsy thing, and learn how to treat your betters."
And he gave the goose a hard peck. When the other geese, who loved their grandmother, saw this, they all fell upon Mr. Peacock and beat and pecked and hustled him till he ran screaming away, dragging his tail behind him. He was now in a sad way, covered with dust, and many of his finest feathers were torn and broken. But still, when he came to the fair, he spread his tail, reared his crest, and made as much of himself as he could.
"I am still handsomer than anyone else," he said, "and people will be sure to admire me."
"Look there," said a man. "There is a peacock.
Let us kill and stuff him and add him to our show.
And he chased Mr. Peacock, who ran off screaming with terror. Coming around a corner, he ran into a large dog who was coming the other way.
Get out of my way! Screamed Mr. Peacock.
Get out of my...
growled Mr. Dog, and he grabbed Mr. Peacock by the neck, shook him hard, and tore out a great mouthful of feathers. More dead than alive, the poor peacock ran and ran and ran, and never stopped till he got home. The geese and turkeys looked at him in great surprise.
Who is this wretched, shabby bird?
They asked each other.
It cannot possibly be Mr. Peacock.
Yes, sobbed the poor creature. It is I, but I have left my pride behind. If you will only let me stay with you, I will do my best to hatch eggs.
But he never could. And the moral of this story that Mr. Peacock should have remembered before he lost his tail feathers is this. Pride goes before a fall. Don't move a muscle. There are more stories to come as Tristan's Storytime continues. Have you ever heard of the phrase, good things come to those who wait? Well, it's true. I remember waiting a long time before I got my first cable-driven grandfather clock. And now, I'm waiting for the day in the future when my ultimate dream comes true. I think we all have one. Don't you agree? Now, I'd like to read a fairy tale you've all been waiting a long time to hear, where a princess falls in love with a handsome prince after being asleep for 100 years. And it's called Sleeping Beauty. Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen who had no children. They longed very much for a child, and when at last they had a little daughter, they were both delighted, and great rejoicings took place. When the time came for the little princess to be christened, the king made a grand feast and invited all but one of the fairies in his kingdom to be godmothers. There happened to be 13 fairies in the kingdom, but as the king had only 12 gold plates, he had to leave one of them out. The 12 fairies that were invited came to the christening and presented the little princess with the best gifts in their possession. One gave her beauty, one gave her wisdom, another grace, another goodness, until all but one had presented their offerings. Just as the last fairy was about to step forward and offer her gift, there came a tremendous knocking at the door. And before anybody could get there to open it, it was burst open, and in came the 13th fairy, in a furious rage at not having been invited to the feast. When she saw all the gifts which the other fairies had presented the child, she laughed and exclaimed,
"A lot of good all this beauty and virtue and wealth will do to you. My pretty princess, you shall pay for the slight your royal father has put upon me."
Then, turning to the terrified king and queen, she said in a loud voice,
"When the princess is 15 years old, she shall prick her finger with a spindle and die."
Having said this, she flew away as noisily as she came. The king and queen were in despair, and the courtiers stood aghast at the terrible disaster, while the little princess began to cry piteously, as if she knew the fate in store for her. Then the 12th fairy stepped forward.
"Do not be afraid," she said. "I have not yet given my gift. I cannot undo the wicked spell, but I can soften the evil. The princess, on her 15th birthday, shall prick her finger with a spindle. But she shall not die. Instead, she shall fall asleep for 100 years.
Alas,
cried the queen,
what comfort will that be to us? Long before the 100 years are past, we shall be dead, and our darling child will be as lost to us as if she were indeed to die.
I can make that right,
said the fairy.
When the princess falls asleep, you shall sleep too, and awaken with her when the 100 years are past.
But the king still hoped to save his daughter from such a terrible misfortune. So he ordered all the spinning wheels in his kingdom to be burnt or destroyed, and made a law that no one was to use one on pain of instant death. But all his care was useless. On her 15th birthday, the princess slipped away from her attendants and wandered all through the palace. At last, she came to a tower which she had never seen before. And wondering what it contained, she climbed the stairs. From a room at the top came a curious humming noise, and the princess, wondering what it could be, pushed open the door and stepped inside. There sat an old woman, bent with age, working at a strangely shaped wheel. The princess was full of curiosity.
"What is that funny-looking thing?"
she asked.
"It is a spinning wheel, princess,"
answered the old woman, who was no other than the wicked fairy in disguise.
"A spinning wheel? What is that? I have never heard of such a thing,"
said the princess. She stood watching for a few minutes. Then she added,
"It looks quite easy. May I try to do it?"
"Certainly, gracious lady,"
said the wicked fairy. And the princess sat down and tried to turn the wheel. But no sooner did she lay her hand upon it than the spindle, which was enchanted, pricked her finger, and the princess fell back against a silk-covered couch, fast asleep. In a moment, a deep silence fell upon all who were in the castle. The king fell asleep in the midst of his counselors, the queen with her ladies-in-waiting, the horses in the stable, the pigeons on the roof, the flies upon the walls, even the very fire upon the hearth, fell asleep too. The meat which was cooking in the kitchen ceased to frizzle, and the cook, who was just about to box the kitchen boy's ears, fell asleep with her hand outstretched and began to snore aloud. The butler, who was toasting the ale, fell asleep with the jug at his lips. A great hedge sprang up around the castle, which, as the years passed on, grew and grew, until it formed an impenetrable barrier around the sleeping palace. The old people of the country died, and their children grew up and died also, and their children and their children. And the story of the sleeping princess became a legend, handed down from one generation to another. And a cloud of mystery, as thick and impenetrable as the hedge of thorns, lay over the old castle. Many brave and gallant princes tried to force their way through the magic hedge in order to solve the mystery and to see for themselves the beautiful maiden who lay in an enchanted sleep behind that thorny barrier. But the thorns caught them and held them from going forward or back, and the gallant youths perished miserably in the thickets. After many, many years, there came a king's son into that country who heard the story of the princess and the hedge of briars, and he made up his mind to try and force his way to the castle to awake the sleeping princess. People told him of the fate of the other princes, who had also attempted this difficult task, but the prince would not be warned.
"I have made up my mind to see the maiden of whose beauty I have heard so many wonderful tales," he cried. "I will force a way through the hedge of thorns and awake the sleeping beauty, or die in the attempt."
Now it happened that this day was the last day of the 100 years, and when the prince came to the thicket that surrounded the castle and began to push his way through, he found that the briars yielded readily to his touch.
The thorns had all blossomed into roses that scented the air with fragrance as he went by. Primroses sprang up before his feet and made a pathway to lead him straight to the castle gates. And the birds suddenly broke forth into singing, as if to tell the world that the 100 years of enchantment were over, and the princess about to be awakened from her long sleep. The prince passed through the council chamber, where the king and his counselors were sleeping, through the room where the queen and her ladies slept. He passed on from hall to hall, climbed from stair to stair, until at last he reached the tower chamber where the sleeping princess lay. For a moment, he stood and gazed in wonder at her lovely face. Then he sank on his knees beside her and kissed her as she lay asleep. Instantly, the spell was broken. The king and queen awoke, and all the courtiers with them. The horses neighed in the stables and shook their glossy manes. The pigeons cooed upon the roof. The flies on the wall moved again. The fire burst up brightly. And the meat in the kitchen began to frizzle once more as the spit turned around. The cook gave the kitchen boy the tremendous box on the ear that she had started to give him 100 years ago. And everything and everybody went on just as usual, as if nothing at all out of the common had occurred. And up on the tower chamber, the princess opened her eyes to meet the gaze of the prince, who had dared to risk his life for her sake. What they said to each other nobody quite knows, for nobody was there to hear or see. But whatever it was, it must have been something very satisfactory, for very soon after, they were married and lived happily ever afterwards. I thought that was a beautiful story, and the moral is that women should wait to find their love before rushing into it. In other words, good things come to those who wait. Stay tuned for more stories, folks, as Tristan's Storytime continues. It never pays to seek harm to anyone else. That's a lesson a deceitful frog learned just a little too late when he had plans for a visiting mouse. Maybe you'll have a better idea understanding what I'm talking about once I read The Frog and the Mouse by Aesop. A young mouse in search of adventure was running along the bank of a pond where lived a frog. When the frog saw the mouse, he swam to the bank and croaked, "Won't you pay me a visit? I can promise you a good time if you do." The mouse did not need much coaxing, for he was very anxious to see the world and everything in it. But though he could swim a little, he did not dare risk going into the pond without some help. The frog had a plan. He tied the mouse's leg to his own with a tough reed. Then into the pond he jumped, dragging his foolish companion with him. The mouse soon had enough of it and wanted to return to shore, but the treacherous frog had other plans. He pulled the mouse down under the water and drowned him. But before he could untie the reed that bound him to the dead mouse, a hawk came sailing over the pond. Seeing the body of the mouse floating on the water, the hawk swooped down, seized the mouse, and carried it off, with the frog dangling from its leg. Thus, at one swoop, he had caught both meat and fish for his dinner. Well, the mouse may have been the frog's victim, but the frog became part of the hawk's dinner as well. And the moral of this story is, those who seek to harm others often come to harm themselves through their own deceit. Remember the nursery rhyme, The Itsy Bitsy Spider? Sure you do. You know, the song you can do with your hands. Of course, you may recall I did this on a special Halloween episode in our first season. Here's how the finger play of the song works. First, when the itsy-bitsy spider goes up the water spout, touch the thumb of one hand to the index finger of the other. Then touch the index finger to the thumb of your other hand. Do this over and over as you slowly raise your hands up high, simulating the movements of a spider. Then, when the rain falls, bring your hands down. And as you do, wiggle your fingers to simulate the rain. And as the rain washes the spider out, sweep your hands away from one another while the palms of your hands point to the floor. Next, when the sun comes out, form a large circle with your hands and slowly raise them high into the air. Then as the spider goes up the spout again, simply repeat the first step. It looks a little complicated at first glance, but once you get it down, this is one exercise you'll remember for life. Now that I've given you instructions on how to do the song using your fingers, let's sing it together. So it's time to use our arms and hands and fingers and sing the classic nursery rhyme, The Itsy Bitsy Spider. Go anywhere. We will return with more Tristan Storytime in just a moment. Okay, culture lovers, it's time for a change of pace because we're going to talk about love and romance. And I think the best way to go about it is with daffodils. And we're about to get lost in a springtime and a field full of them, because they're featured in a poem called I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud, or simply, The Daffodils, by William Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could but proudly stay in such jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. Far off, when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills, and dances with the daffodils. Next time on a special edition of Tristan Storytime, it's our 30th episode, so we'll have a mix of old and new stories. First up, Mr. Jeremy Fisher plans to catch 5 minnows for dinner with his friends. Then Hansel and Gretel end up getting lost in a huge forest and meet a wicked witch who wants to have them for supper. Next, a wolf asks a crane to remove a bone from his throat, followed by the quiet song, Hush, Little Baby. And finally, Robert Louis Stevenson takes us out to the open sea and gives us that timeless question, where go the boats? That's next time on Tristan Storytime. Well, that just about wraps things up for today, but before we go, I want to remind you of a few last-minute pieces of information that I think you should know. First of all, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, there are plenty more exciting episodes on any of the podcast platforms you chose today. Also, you can follow Tristan Storytime on any of the social media platforms where you'll find video clips of stories I read on past shows every Thursday at 4 p.m. And you can find it all on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. In addition, you can find Tristan Storytime on Discord. And as you've noticed, music and sound effects will be included with every story I read. Every day, we're always finding new ways for all of us to grow together. Oh, and one last thing. If you have a classic family-friendly story idea that you'd like me to read on a future show, such as a picture book story, fairy tale, a fable from Aesop, or a poem, just send an email to TristanStorytime@gmail.com. That's TristanStorytime, all lowercase, @gmail.com. And that's without the apostrophe. Well, it's time for me to go, but I'll be back again soon. So until next time, I'm Tristan Gardner. Thank you for listening, and God bless, my friends. And remember to keep using your imaginations, because I use mine to help you use yours. Today's stories and nursery rhymes are How Mr. Peacock Went to the Fair, taken from the book 3 Minute Stories by Laura E. Richards, illustrated by Josephine H. Bruce, published in 1914 by the Page Company. Sleeping Beauty, taken from the book Favorite Fairy Tales, arranged by Logan Marshall, published in 1917 by the John C. Winston Company. The Frog and the Mouse, taken from the book The Aesop for Children by Aesop. Pictures by Myla Winter, published in 1919 by Rand McNally and Company. The Itsy Bitsy Spider, originally written in 1910. Actual nursery rhyme publication in 1947 by the California Folklore Society. Music arrangement by the Green Orbs. I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud by William Wordsworth, taken from the book The Poetical Works of William Wordsworth. Edited by William Angus Knight. Published in 1896 by Macmillan and Company.